Happy July. And it's hot as a fool, especially on the West Coast. Shout out to Vegas. Love Vegas, but y'all were too hot. I had to bring my butt back. Listen, it is the Soul Ties Podcast, and I am super excited as we kick off the halfway point of this roller coaster year called 2020. Shout out to all my Patreons. If it wasn't for you, we couldn't do what we do. So we love you as usual. Thank you. Y'all know y'all are my heart. And to all the listeners, dedicated listeners each and every week of the Soul Ties Podcast, we appreciate that. Broadcasting all over the world on the road to detoxing 1 million souls.
Yeah.
So we doing our thing, I go by the name of Dale Lawrence.
And it's your girl Merc, aka Miss P31.
And it's your boy Timo with the damn smooths.
And it's Lily P Love.
And we are the Soul Circle, the Soul Ties Mafia, Triple Soul Mafia, all that good stuff. And we have a special guest in the building. We have a very special interview that we're getting ready to do. You've already seen it, but I want to give her an introduction. Incredible songstress.
Yes.
Let's just start there and end there. That's it. That's all that need to be said about this awesome woman. And then she'll, of course, fill in the blanks during the interview. Miss Karen Brown. What's going on, KB?
Hello, everybody.
Welcome to Soul Ties.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for accepting. This is going to be good.
Oh, wow.
No. This is going to be real good. Okay, so first and foremost, guys, for those of you who are uninformed and uninitiated, in the words of the ladies, man, Karen is one of the most talented singers.
Come on.
This side of the Mississippi.
Yes,
I'm talking about, man, listen, and she has just agreed to be the musical guest for the Soul Ties experience.
Yes.
That we just started. As of last week with D. McGee, which was phenomenal.
Yes, it was.
And so it's going to be, we're going to go up even more with Karen Brown, with KB, so you'll get a chance to hear her vocal talent in its rare form on that platform. But an incredible story this woman has. We have been friends, 10 years maybe?
A little more than that.
A little more than 10 mm-hmm. years? Okay, so about 10 years. She's not originally from Memphis, so we definitely want to hear the backdrop. So let's start off. Karen, where are you from originally?
I am originally from Oxford, Mississippi.
Is she a Mississippi girl,
yes.
Timo?
Mississippi.
I'm from Mississippi.
Is
you from Mississippi?
Don't play with it. Oxford, Mississippi. So how does a girl from Oxford, Mississippi find her way to Memphis, Tennessee?
Well, I left Oxford at the age of 17 to go to college at Jackson State University Jackson, Mississippi. Yes. I left Oxford to go to Jackson to attend Jackson State University, and I just wound up staying down there for 13 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I was there before I moved to Memphis, but yeah. I would say music brought me here.
Okay.
Not initially. My sister brought me here.
Okay, we'll pick it up. We'll pick that. We're coming back to that. But I like to go from the beginning, the middle, and the end. So let's start in Oxford. When did you know that you had the gift of music?
Oh, when I was, I guess, able to understand and hear myself sing. Mm-hmm. And then my mother put me and my sister in the front of the church at the age of like 3 and 4 mm-hmm. to do duets. And, you know, the people loved it. And I just kept going from there.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think I went solo at 6.
What was the group you left? What was Destiny's
Child?
What
my
was
sister.
It? You
the Brown Singers.
The Brown Singers, and you cut your own sister off. That's terrible.
She didn't want it.
Well, you gotta go with the goals. If she didn't want it, she didn't want it. So, okay, so boom. So you're singing in Oxford. Mm-hmm. Doing a lot of churches, I'm guessing.
Churches, weddings, concerts at Ole Miss. I was like a teenager singing at Ole Miss.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, singing at concerts there.
So how did you get your popularity? I mean, how did you get known, like, around and stuff? How did people know you to where you were doing all these things as a teenager?
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth is how it happened.
Don't play with the word of mouth. So when did you realize you were cold?
I still don't realize I'm cold. I think I'm lukewarm.
Girl, please. Girl, please.
That's the humility. That's humility.
I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying. That's my reality.
Okay, okay, okay. So Jackson State, you go to get Jackson State. Mm-hmm. Okay, now I saw an interview recently with you, and I did not know that, y'all, she was on the Apollo.
Wow.
Showtime at the Apollo with
what
Steve
age?
Harvey.
With Steve Harvey. Yeah, so I was older then. I was still in Jackson. But it was actually 1997, and he had come to he had performed in Jackson, and then his after party was at the club that I was singing at. And so he walked in or whatever, and I'm on stage when he walks in or whatever. And so when I'm done, he's right here by the stage, and then I walk over. He beckons me to come over to him, and he was like, "What's your name?" And I was like, "Karen, girl, you know you can sing." He said, he just shook his head, and he was like, "I ain't never seen nothing like it." And he was like, "I'm going to send you to the Apollo."
Man.
That's how I got there. You know, normally there's some type of contest or audition or something you have to do. He actually sent me to the Apollo.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And by that time, you were not in college anymore.
I was 27.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you win?
I did.
You go, girl. I know you did.
What question? When did you know you were cold? I mean, like, probably around then. It would be a good moment to realize.
There was so much more that happened before that moment, though. Because even when I was at Jackson State, the reason they even knew that I sang is because I was actually at my work-study job. And the lady that was the secretary in that office was the secretary or president? Something for the Mississippi Mass Choir. So I was literally just walking around the office singing. And so she actually put me in a group of hers, a gospel group that she had, and we did a Malico Records Christmas party. And so after we finished singing, I think I might have led a song at that party, and then David Curry, who was the director of the Mississippi Mass Choir, like yelled across the room, "I want you." So there's another opportunity, another chance where there was no audition with the Mississippi Mass Choir. There is an audition process. I didn't go through any of that. I was chosen.
Wow.
Wow.
I was chosen to be in the Mississippi Mass Choir. And normally you start out on the back row and work your way to the front. He put me on the front row. And not only did he place me on the front row, I came in leading people's songs who couldn't travel.
Wow.
God is good.
Yes, yeah. Yes, he is.
So back to the Apollo. I always wondered. I always wondered this. What did you win?
What did I win?
Yeah, they give you money. What they give you?
No, they don't give you anything. It's more, I guess, for a recognition type thing.
Yeah, and that's mad.
But I mean, it was major for me just even having the opportunity to go.
Of course,
you know?
Of course. So how many times did you win? Because I knew it was like a week thing. Like if you win,
I won
come back.
Once, and then when I taped the second episode, I didn't win that time. But the experience was more important than the win.
Oh, of course, for me. Of course. Mm-hmm. So did anything come out of that as far as business or?
Yes, more gigs and rates up.
Rates went up, baby. Do not play with it. Mm-mm. Now, in this age, you know, where you have talent, definitely, you're from Mississippi, but usually artists or people who sing just kind of worry about that. But you have a dual gift. You're also an administrator, a gifted one at that. Talk about that.
You know, I took because
you talk very highly about that. You know,
I do. Yes. My spiritual gift is not even music. My spiritual gift is administration.
Explain that to the people. What
I mean by that is I am a very well organized person, and I like to get things done. And I try not to say this. I am a perfectionist, but I know there is no true meaning of real perfection. But everything I do, I strive to do it in excellence. So I replace perfection with excellence.
How long have you been like that?
All my life.
All your
life. Now that I think about it, literally all my life. But it stemmed from my birth defects.
Okay, birth defects.
Yeah.
Now you brought that up.
So. I did.
All right, so let's.
But
talk.
It's okay.
Right. No, of course. I mean, let's get into this. Well, you don't know who you're helping.
Okay.
Who's listening?
All right.
Let's talk about your birth defects. What are your birth defects?
I was born with web toes, web fingers, a club foot. They told my mother that I would never walk. But 21 surgeries later, I think my last surgery was when I was 19. Here I am walking and singing, and God keeps pushing me out front.
Yeah, yeah.
He keeps pushing me out front.
So you didn't want to be out front?
At a young age, I knew that I wanted to sing, and I knew that I wanted to be on stages, but I didn't want to be in front of people, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Mm. Because I was shy. I used to hold myself back and hide myself and cover myself up because I was perceived as handicapped, or there go that cripple girl, or she walk funny, or, you know, look at her. Ain't nobody gonna ever want her, and all those type of things. But anyway, here I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here you are.
So I have a question. What was one of the major things that helped you to overcome those insecurities? Because a lot of times people have these insecurities, mm-hmm. but then they get fame on top of it, mm-hmm. and they don't know how to navigate through it. And mm-hmm. it's not necessarily healing as it is. It's just masking mm-hmm. because of popularity and because of other people. But you being a woman of God, what were the things that helped you, or at what point was it like, I don't care about this anymore, you mm-hmm. know, and you're able to walk in it boldly and confidently?
As crazy as it may sound, it was this year, at the top of 2020, I did my first show at the Rumba Room. Like I said, I always wear big clothes and hide myself. I cannot believe I walked out on stage in some tights and some boots. And I was like, oh my God. I was in the back and they were like, what's wrong? I was like, I can't go out there like this. They said, yes, you can. Once I got out there on that stage and took a deep breath and I let it out, and they were giving me, I hadn't said a word, and I got a standing ovation just because of what I had on. That was so powerful to me. And that was like, okay, you've been hiding this all the time, and this is what somebody else needed. Uncover yourself. Because God created you this way to help somebody else and let them see and know that if you can do it, they can do it.
That's
too.
Right. Yeah. That's so good. So did something just hit you at 2020? Because this year has been life-changing for a lot of us for different reasons.
I say for me, it was the year of release, of just letting go and being 100% me. No more hiding, no more covering, no more, you know, shielding myself. I mean, it's me. So mm-hmm. if you're going to love me, you got to accept me for how I am and who I am.
That's beautiful. And there's freedom, so much freedom.
Oh, my God, so much freedom. So much freedom.
So how did these defects affect relationships?
You would have, I have been in relationships where people's peers have picked on them for being with a handicapped girl. Or I have been in relationships where somebody felt like they could deal with it, but then once they see what I have to go through behind the scenes, they didn't want to deal with that. Mm. There's a lot of pain behind the scenes. I would say affected a lot of relationships. Yeah. Because of the things that I have to deal with personally.
Right.
And they didn't know how to accept it or know how to deal with it or know how to be mature enough to let their friends know, you don't know who she is. You don't know how she is. You don't know how she loves me. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the case may be. But they let that get in the way. So that just lets me know that they weren't for me.
Any of the relationships been abusive?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
How did you deal with it?
Oh, my God. That happened when I was in college. So when I went to college, I had never dated because of my birth defects. And so I get to college, and there's this guy who comes along. Oh, you know, I love you. There's nothing wrong with you. I'm going to love you for who you are, whatever. What I didn't realize is the things that he was doing and saying were abusive. They were verbally abusive, mentally abusive. But because I had such a low self-esteem, I allowed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I thought, you know, he would tell me, no one's ever going to love you like I do. No one's ever going to. And I believed it. And the first time he hit me, the first time, I got up, I walked up the street, I picked up the payphone, I called my mom. She's like, baby, you're not married, you don't have to stay. But mama, he loves me. But then I had seen my dad hit my mom and she stayed. So I thought it was okay to stay, but it wasn't.
How long did you stay?
Probably a year or so after that. There was so much that happened in between time. I'm talking about TVs thrown at me, guns pulled on me, bats, just all kinds of stuff, you know.
Wow. So what was it that what was the wake up moment? What was the moment, you know, that was like, I'm not going to deal with this anymore?
The wake up moment was, I guess I woke up one morning and was like, you know what? I'm not going to deal with this anymore. I'm not going to put up with it anymore. And so I had to get a restraining order. And then from that point on, it took me a while to even get back in another relationship. But
so
I
how long were you in that relationship?
Probably like a year and a half, 2 years. Okay. But mind you, I had a low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. I had low self-esteem and thought that no one else would love me.
Did you have to overcome a lot of fear going into the next relationship?
Yeah. And then here's where I think I messed up. I told them what happened. Oh, I would never do you like that. They turned around and did the exact same thing.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you think by telling them, you gave them permission?
I gave them permission. Yep. They were more verbally abusive. They did get physical, but even in the physical abusive relationships that I've been in, for me right now, if I had to do anything else, I would rather be in a physical abusive relationship than a verbally and emotional abusive relationship. I can heal from the physical, but that mental and emotional abuse takes a toll on your life.
Why is it?
I don't know. Maybe it's because of the verbiage that they use. They talk so down about you and put you down so much that you really start thinking yourself that way. Even looking in the mirror and they're pointing out all these flaws and stuff. And you're looking in the mirror too, like, well, you know, well, maybe it is true or whatever.
So do you still feel like that now?
I don't want to be abused in any kind of way, honestly. Right. But I'm just saying, right. if it was, not that it's ever going to come about, but in retrospect,
right.
The physical abuse was nothing compared to the emotional and the verbal abuse.
Okay, I got you. And with someone being in the spotlight like you are, did any of that, or how did it? I know it did. Let's talk about how did that abuse affect performance?
Oh my God, there were so many times I was on stages with black eyes and bruises, but you would never know it because makeup would cover it up. And so I would get on the stage and I would perform for the people and with a big smile on my face, and then I would be afraid to go home when it was over.
Wow. After those toxic relationships where you were going through abuse, what was your process of healing that you went through to realize that this is not for me, this is not what God has for me? Because I feel like a lot of us, we know when we're in it, but it's difficult. Like we talk about soul ties here all the time on how you can know that something is wrong with you, but once that something is wrong with your relationship, but once that soul tie is formed, it's so difficult to break it. Mm-hmm. And so we're always talking to people about how to increase their self-esteem, how to see their value, how to know that this is not okay, that you deserve more. So what was part of that process like for you?
I can just say time. It took a lot of time. It took a lot of time, and even other relationships, because I found myself becoming abusive. After the abusive relationships, I became abusive to other people, but it was a defense mechanism.
Talk about it.
Okay. So I got into another relationship, and they would do things that would remind me these people.
Sure.
And so when they would do those things, unknowingly, I would lash out. Like physically.
Wow.
I would lash out physically and put my hands on them.
First.
Yes.
Before they did it to you.
Yes.
Okay, so at what point did you realize, you know what, I can't be this person either?
Right. It took a minute to realize that actually that was...
Oh, so you were whipping niggas' butts for a long time.
I mean, no, not a long time. No, but when I realized that that's what I was doing, I had to pull myself way back. I even had to go to counseling. I had to go to anger management classes. I had to just
that you put yourself in.
Yes.
See, that's incredible because, you know, like she said, we talk about this up here all the time, and people are usually not that proactive to be and self-reflective to be able to look at themselves and be like, okay, I got a problem and I need to get help.
Yeah.
How did you even... Like, what even brought you to that, being that so many people don't do that? They don't feel like they need help, or they rather stay the victim or stay the monster. or the victimizer.
Right. So once I realized that I was a monster myself, mm-hmm. It took actually three relationships to get to that point. And that third one made me realize, okay, like, this is way too much. Mm. I need to pull back. I need to draw back. I need some help. Mm. I need some help. And then, like, seeking out the therapy and going to therapy made me realize that I was reliving what I was receiving, but now I was the giver, you know, of the abuse.
Right.
And I was like, I can't. I had to control myself and be like that. And then when I know, like, now if somebody pushes me to that point, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see you later. I'm going to go. Mm. Yeah, but I try my best to not even let it get to that point.
Yeah.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So there's so many people, especially in the Black community, where those kinds of things are really, we talk down on it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's what's going on with us? It stays in the house, and we don't go and tell people our business, and we don't need counseling. And a big thing is, you know, you are a woman of God, but you do have a lot of people who traditionally feel like God is all you need.
Right.
So if something's wrong, go to church. Mm-hmm. If something's wrong, read the word. Mm-hmm. So what can you say you were able to gain from therapy, or to speak to the people who may still not be wanting to seek out therapy, who may feel like it's going to make them look like they don't have faith, or right. they don't trust God? What can you say that to add value to that piece of it, mm-hmm. and why that's so important?
God is definitely who I sought out first. But on top of seeking God, I knew that I needed therapy. So when I went to the therapy session, and what helped me is being able to just free myself of what was going on, because we hold so much stuff in and you don't realize. And just here recently, a release is sometimes what you need, really all the time, because we spend so much time trying to fake it till we make it, and smile and make everybody think everything is so grand, when in the meantime and in between time, you at home crying every night and, you know, drowning yourself in your own tears, wondering what's wrong with you and whatever. But I found going to therapy and freeing myself, even if this one therapist just let me sit there and cry the whole time, I didn't say a word. All I did was cry. But just the pouring out of those tears for me released a lot. And then the next time we had a conversation, she listened to me, like, from beginning to end, and she would ask questions. She was pulling stuff out of me that I didn't even know was there.
Wow. Mm.
So that in itself helps. Talking to somebody. You know, talking to your friends and your families is cool, but talking to a professional, because they can guide you and make you want to feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So college, you're out of college. Yep. What brings you to Memphis?
Oh, so I was out of college in 92, and I didn't move here to 2003.
Okay.
So what happened was I started going out to clubs or whatever, and then...
Now, what's your degree in?
Elementary education. I have a bachelor's of science in elementary education.
Right.
Yeah. Graduated magna cum laude.
Come on, girl.
But do nothing in the field, though.
Aha. Uh-huh. I do have a degree to teach children, mm-hmm. but I teach all the time.
Right, sure.
Yeah, I may not definitely be in, teaching kids, but
right.
you know, I'm still teaching.
Well, one would say, a lot of adults like kids.
You spoke on it.
All right, let's go. What gets you to Memphis?
What gets me to Memphis? I'll go back to Jackson. Started out singing in the clubs. I did like an amateur night or whatever, and I won like 3 weeks in a row, and then they had me as a guest, and then other club owners would be at this specific spot and say, okay, why don't you come sing in my club? And then the radio station started reaching out to me for concerts that would come in town, so I'd be the opening act for a lot of national acts. And then years passed by, I kept winning awards down there, award after award or whatever, which was great. What brought me to Memphis is that my sister, my baby sister, was teaching in the Tunica County school systems. And I said, okay, you know what? It's time for a change of scenery, you know, whatever. Just need to move. It was a relationship, too, that brought me here. Mm. But
you want to talk about that?
Uh-uh. Not at all. No, thank you.
No, okay. No,
anyway. Yeah. I moved up here April 28th, which was on a Monday in 2003. My sister spent the whole week with me, helping me unpack and everything. We went to Beale Street and hung out that Saturday night. Sunday morning, she says, okay, I'm about to go back to Tunica. I was like, okay, you know. She left out, and she came back in, and she says, she hugged me from the back. She's like, I love you. Okay, I love you. Call me when you get home. Monday, I just moved. I'd only been to Memphis for a week. It's a storm happening in Oxford, Mississippi. So I call my mom, and I'm like, Mama, I'm calling back to check on y'all. Like, she's like, yeah, we're in the bathroom. We're covered. It's a tornado coming through or whatever. I was like, okay, I'm going to call y'all back in 30 minutes. Been in my apartment for a week. I'd only given my apartment number to my mom. So my phone rings before I could call them back. She was like, baby, God don't make no mistakes. I'm like, what are you talking about? My daddy in the background like, go on, tell her. So the sister has spent the week with me that I moved to Memphis to be with. She got killed in a car accident literally 1 week after I moved here.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you ain't give me the relationship, so we're going to go in right here.
Okay.
So, you know, you were mad at God.
I was. Angry.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, my sister passed, and a couple of months later, my older sister was done having kids. My mom didn't have any other child but me, and so she was like, I want another grandchild. So, you know, I purposely get pregnant and lose my sister in May. I'm pregnant in September, October. I get a call from Jackson, Mississippi to come perform. I went to perform. Saw a girlfriend I hadn't seen in like years. She had moved to Dallas. She had moved back to Dallas on a Friday. We had a long conversation. That Monday, I get to work, get a phone call. Karen, did you hear about Dee? And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Well, her boyfriend shot and killed her in front of their 3-year-old son, then went in the woods and killed himself. Like, what? So I moved to a new city. I lose my sister. I'm pregnant. I lose a good friend. This is October. November, December, January rolls around. I'm pregnant. Start having pains. Getting ready to go to the doctor. The doctor says, okay, I'll call him. He's like, oh, you just come in Monday. We have an appointment on Monday. Sunday night, pains got unbearable. Sunday at 9:43, I just looked at it today. I lose my son.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Move to Memphis, lose my sister, pregnant, lose a good friend, lose a baby. I'm a nutcase. Mm-hmm. Like, God, why did you do this to me? Why did you move me to a whole nother city and put me through all of this?
Mm.
I was a zombie. I would get up when I did go to work. Get up, go to work, go home. Get up, go to work, go home. I wasn't singing or anything. I was lifeless.
So how did you climb out of that?
I started by going to church, which I was already going to church, but I wasn't active here at all, musically at all.
Mm.
So I joined the choir at a church. I started singing, started taking gigs again. Singing is what brought me back to life.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Being able to get on stage and share my feelings and share what I have gone through to get here was my release.
Mm.
God gave me my life back through my voice.
Gotcha. Mm. That's good.
And how long did it take you to snap back and start singing again?
Oh my gosh. It took, I know. I moved in 2003, so 2004 is when I got in the choir. So during that time, there were some local things going on here in Memphis, and people would hear about me, and I started singing, I think, with Rebirth first, and then Will Graves and Soul. I started singing with him, and so that went on for a couple of years, and people would hear about me. Word of mouth,
Word of mouth. Yeah,
That's been my career, word of mouth.
Awesome.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you, God.
I know, right? Now, are your parents still married?
Yes, they are. They have been married for 53 years.
53 years. Amazing. So, what did you learn from them to do, and what did you learn not to do?
I learned to love in spite of.
Mm-hmm.
I learned not to go to bed angry.
Mm-hmm.
I learned work ethic from my parents. My early arrival I get from my dad. Like, you know, we have to be somewhere at 7 o'clock. We're going to be there at 6.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I'm just saying, yeah, you know, because you never know what might happen,
right,
you know, on the way or whatever. I learned independence. My mom taught me that, especially with my birth defect. She always encouraged me that no matter what somebody tells you can't do, you can do it.
Mm.
All you have to do is put your mind and your heart to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you have a great motto that really, when you said it, it caused me to be like, okay, I got to interview you based off that motto right there. It was so good. It was so deep. Let the people know what that is.
Well, okay, since you call it my motto, and it is what I'm going by right now.
Right.
I do not want to die in limbo because of love.
Okay. Mm. Explain what that means to the people.
what that means to the people is I in a situationship. Yeah. And this person, I can't say that they have me waiting because I choose to wait. Waiting on them to make their mind up if I'm who they want to be with. But it's because they have an issue too. They lost their sister last year due to cancer and their whole life changed. Mm. And so I was put on the back burner, you know, because of that. And I understood it for a moment, but I've been waiting like over a year now and I'm not getting any younger, you know, so at some point I'm going to have to make the decision, but I mean, I choose to wait because I love them just that much and they're worth waiting on, but I don't want to be gone tomorrow and not know where my love is, you know, where my love is coming from. I know where I'm giving it, but you know.
How do you determine whether or not this person is worth waiting on or if it's something that you just need to move on from? Like, what's the difference? Because you've been in a situation where you've known, I need to go. You know, and then like you said, this time, like, this person is worth it. What makes this person different to say, I would be willing to possibly wait while you go through this process?
Because I know their heart. That's what keeps me holding on, because I know their heart and I know that it's pure and it's genuine and this life has happened. But I understand, because I know when I lost my sister, what happened with me. So that's another reason I'm holding on, because I understand where she is. Mm-hmm. But not only did her sister pass, she left three kids here. So now the role has been taken on of another parent.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow. Incredible story. And as you come into 2020, you know, you came in, you know, with this whole thing revealing, being comfortable with yourself. Y'all can't see it. It should have been visual, all the movement she's doing. But, I mean, it is amazing that you have merged your administration with your artistry. So many artists do not do that. And you are, this year you celebrated 10 years of being, this is not your hometown, but you have produced.
Yes.
10 years worth of shows, four times a year.
Yes.
Every year for 10 years.
Successfully. Successfully,
yes. Yeah. That deserves applause.
Yes, it does. Yes. Memphis is a hard crowd.
It is. It really is. That. And that's why I thank God for every opportunity, every avenue, every adventure, and every audience that he has given me. And I know that they were specifically designed for me.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you made a living off of cover songs, singing other people's music.
Mm-hmm.
Is there original music coming?
Maybe. No, there are some things coming. You know what? That has never been like a priority for me.
Why?
You know?
Now, why is that? Because one would usually say, well, you know, with a voice like that, Karen, you're singing other people's stuff. Why don't? And then looking at your story, I'm like, we want to hear your heart. We want to hear what you've been through.
Yeah. In my music, in my own music.
Yeah.
It's coming. I'm going to say it's coming. And I'll say this. Mm-hmm. I've done songs over the years, and I actually did a whole album before, but it was just for me to see if I could do it. I never released it.
Why?
Because of other things.
Why not share with the world?
And you know what? And I feel like timing is everything. That's okay. All I'm going to say. I feel like timing is everything. I don't think it was time, but I think the time is coming.
The time is coming. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Well, I mean, it's 2020. You came into this year, you know, wearing some that you never would wear before.
I know, right?
So what do we expect in the next 10 years out of KB?
Here we go with that 10-year question. You know what? You know what? To be alive, to still be able to inspire and encourage people on whatever level, whether it's singing or whether it's talking or speaking or whatever the case may be, just changing lives for the better. That's what I see for me in the next 10 years.
Gotcha. So to someone, some stranger you probably will never meet, will never inbox you, will never DM you, but heard this interview, who may have been born with some type of defect, may have been abused, may be in a relationship right now where either they're being abused or they're abusing someone else. What would you tell them?
get yourself together. No, seriously, though. No, take some time to get to know who you really are. Take some time to actually seek out therapy if you desire that. I promise you it helps way more than it hurts to be able to release everything that's going on within you and not be judged for it. You know, not be talked about for it. They're giving you some genuine feedback on how to express yourself, how to adjust your life to become a better you. Spend more time with you. Mm. Spend more time with you to get to know you.
Good.
We're so big on wanting to be attached to somebody else or including somebody else in our lives. No, we got to know ourselves first.
Yeah.
And it's taken me a minute to do that, but I mean, it definitely can happen.
Last question. You've been through a lot, and at one point in the story, you were mad at God.
Mm-hmm.
What's the relationship now?
God, we are the best of friends. Yes, we are.
One would say, how did that happen? Like one would listen to what you said and like, I feel her. Like, I would have been mad, too. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, I would have turned away. But mm-hmm. you're still with God.
Yeah, why? I am still why? With God because why? He is my comforter. He is my provider. He has been the healing process. He has been my source. He has been my resource for everything that I've gone through. Yeah. He just is. He's my everything.
In spite of you.
In spite of.
Being mad.
In spite of me being mad at him. And, you know, God knows we're human. We're going to get angry. I'm sure he gets angry at us. But guess what? He still loves us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He still loves us.
So you just use that love right back at him.
I give it right back to him.
Look at that. Ain't nothing else to be said. Ladies and gentlemen, Karen Brown, tell everybody your social media handle so they can follow you.
Okay, Karen Brown Live. It's just that simple. Facebook, yeah. Karen Brown Live. Instagram, at Karen Brown Live.
And you will see her live on July the 19th, Soul Ties Experience Live. You'll get a chance to hear this beautiful voice and just see her in her element. I'm super excited to see what comes about. Listen, y'all, thank y'all for listening. This has been another Soul Seat edition of the Soul Ties Podcast. Thank you, Patreons, because y'all make this stuff happen, man, each and every month. We love you so much, and we'll see you next week. But until then, I am Dale Lawrence.
And it's your girl, Merc, a.k.a. Miss P31.
And it's your boy, Timo, with the dance moves.
And it's Lily P. Love.
Saying peace and love, y'all, and we'll see you next week on the Soul Ties Podcast.